We all know how valuable photos and video clips of a loved one are. But have you thought about capturing their full story in their own words as an audio podcast or as a video? At GK Media, we've been working with families, hospices, and nursing homes across Ireland over the past 10 years to help preserve precious memories. We help you celebrate the voices, special moments, and wisdom of your loved ones by recording your meaningful conversations together. Record in our Galway studio, or we can travel to you bringing our own recording equipment. Whether it's a tribute, life story, or message for future generations, we capture it with care and compassion. Visit gkmedia.ie/legacy and let us help you tell the story that deserves to be remembered.
Hey guys, just a quick hello from me and a heartfelt thanks to you all for supporting the podcast each and every week. Every little thing that you do is helping more than you would ever realize. A simple follow on Spotify or on Apple, wherever you're listening to me, on any of the social media channels, if you interact with the videos, give it a share or a comment. It is just helping to reach more and more people every week, which is what I want to do because I want to keep this going. I know that it is helping so many people, which is fantastic. Thank you all so much for supporting and being here with me. This week's episode, like them all, is super special. This guy is 17 years old and by God, did he blow me away. So I hope that you enjoy it. Let me know how you found it and I will talk to you all soon. Hi. So today I am back again and I'm joined by the lovely Chris O'Connor from Limerick.
Yeah.
I've got that right. Okay. And I have come across Chris through your mom, Grace. The lovely Grace was at one of my weekend retreats and she was sharing a video that you did on TikTok. And I jokingly said, he should come on the podcast. And then bang, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, you're here. So I'm delighted to have you.
Thanks. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, so you're obviously here today to talk about your family and all of that. And I suppose loss is what we talk about. But if we go back to the start, where are you from?
Yeah,
Limerick, you were born, your mom and your biological dad.
Yeah, my biological dad. And then my sister was born around 3 years after me. And at that same time, my mom and my biological dad split up.
Okay.
And that was followed by a few rough years. But then who I'm speaking about today, who I call my father, then came into my life when I was around 6 years old.
And so tell me about James.
James was such a positive guy and
he met your mom when you were
six years old. Yeah.
Where did they meet?
They met through just groups and for drinking groups. So coming out of like a rough time and then, but all I know him as is just a positive guy and worked so hard to make the people around him happy and childish in a way that like he'd always be outside the front with me playing and literally we're outside the front playing ball with me and all my friends and they'd look at him as a friend as well, but in the same time he was strict in other ways just because he wanted a good future for us so badly. And that lives with me till today. Like
he was the father figure, like, so he's putting boundaries and stuff in place and really raising ye as his own kids, like
100%.
Do you remember when your mom first brought him home? And
well, I remember the first day that we met him and we were just out in the city centre and we went to McDonald's and just got ice creams and I just remember us walking around by Arthur's Quay Park then.
Yeah. What did you make of him straight away?
My mum said I liked him and I told him that I loved him the first day that I met him.
Oh, stop.
Yeah. So I liked him from the start, but Lily wasn't as easygoing, my younger sister.
Okay.
She was a bit tough running, but she came around after a while.
Yeah. And then you blended perfectly. And then after that, didn't you, your mum and your dad had a little boy?
Yeah, James, about a year on then.
Yeah.
So he's 10 now, yeah.
And you were delighted when he arrived home, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a lad as well. He's like his dad, loads of energy and he's always constantly doing something.
Yeah, I just met him. He gave me two big high fives before we sat down. And so tell me then, I suppose, as you got a little bit older, your relationship with James, what was that like?
So, well, I went through a few years where it was like a rough patch, and I wasn't telling much to either of my parents, and I was just going around messing with my friends and doing stupid stuff, like.
Mm-hmm.
But then James was constantly trying to get me to do stuff, even no matter how many times I said no, he'd always keep asking me. And then he asked me at one point, well, first in 2019, he took me to do the Great Limerick Run with him, the 10K, and we'd done that together. And that was kind of before I went through a rough patch, like.
Mm.
But then again, after I went through that rough patch, when I was around 14, 15, he challenged me and he said that he'd give me 20 quid if I'd done a faster 10K time than him. So I really didn't want then. I had no interest in it. But I said, for the 20 quid, why wouldn't I try? And then I ended up doing it faster than him. And a few months following from that, then we started going out on runs together.
Okay.
And that was only 2 months before he went to Kilimanjaro.
Do you feel like him doing that kind of pulled you out of that rough patch?
Definitely, yeah. That's kind of what I bring it down to, like, because there was so much, and I know my mom was really supportive and my whole family is really supportive. But I kind of look at that, and that's what I really think was like the change and the key changing factor, like.
Yeah.
Especially that moment when he challenged me to do that 10K, and I thought I was just doing it because why wouldn't I? But yeah. Then when I actually beat him, I was like, I was surprised, and it just gave me a different outlook on things, like.
Yeah. So was he was obviously into fitness a lot.
Yeah. Running in the gym mainly, yeah. And soccer as well. But.
Yeah. Do you mind like touching on that rough patch? What was it that you were going through at that time, or do you even know now? Was it just hanging around with the wrong crowd, or?
Yeah, well, there was definitely some stage where I was hanging around with the wrong people, but just like that, like I didn't have any sport really. I played soccer, but that was just kind of casual to me, and I had nothing to do except go outside. So I was just doing stupid things to entertain me, like smoking or drinking.
Mm.
And I really had nothing to motivate me to do otherwise, like, even though I knew my parents didn't want me to, but it didn't really make me not want to. And then when I got into that, running gave me a reason to not want it for myself, like, you know.
Yeah, it's just like most parents worry and fear about, like, teenagers going off the rails and stuff, and it's like you're trying to figure out what is it that's driving them to that in the first place. It's obviously like there's nothing to do, like it's hard,
yeah,
isn't
100%,
it? 100%,
yeah, because it's like a weird stage just in the middle when you're not going out. Even like when you get a bit older, you can go out into town or you can go to a pub and have a few drinks. But there's nothing really for that age in between, like.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I think leads a lot of people to go out and do stupid things.
And so you fall in with a crowd, and then it's very hard to say no, like, isn't it?
Yeah.
For everyone's to having a drink, like,
yeah,
it's hard to be the only one not to. Anyway, so you obviously, James was such a huge influence in terms of like motivating you to do something else. So did you get into that together then?
Yeah. After that 10K, yeah, we done a few runs. We didn't get a chance to do many, but we're definitely intending on doing more. And he was planning on training me to do the Cork Marathon.
Okay. So it was coming up to his 40th birthday, and he decided that he wanted to do something special.
Yeah.
So what did he plan to do?
So he decided to go over and climb Kilimanjaro with one of his friends for his 40th birthday, which is on the 5th of December, the same date as my 16th birthday it was. And so it was the 29th November when he went over, spent the day over there before, and he was planning on doing it over the course of 6 or 7 days, which is kind of the shorter version. Like, you can do it over the course of 10 days or 14 days as well. Mm. I remember the days coming up to before we were going, I think I was doing work experience in school because I was in TY. And I just remember one day I was doing work experience with TFA, like soccer, and we went to somewhere, but we went to the wrong place. And then we just decided we'd leave it off for the day. And we just went to the petrol station and got the car washed. And no, it's just such a strong memory in my head because it was just the last time we were just together for the day. And then 1 or 2 days later, then we were going to school the day that he was leaving. And we were just all at the door just waving goodbye to him as he was getting in the car. And then our last goodbye to him properly was he went over to Tanzania and he spent one day over there. They just spent the day around the town that they were in or whatever. Mm. Him and his friend Alan. And then he was leaving at 6 a.m. to start the day of, and we all got up and just spoke to him on the phone for a few minutes and just said, goodbye, I love you. The normal stuff, like, because it didn't enter any of our heads that something so serious would happen. So it doesn't even have like a strong memory in my head, because in the moment I didn't think it was anything crazy. It was just like a normal goodbye, I'd say, when I'm leaving the house to me and at the time.
So he was heading off to climb summit that morning.
Yeah.
And he planned to do it on the morning of his birthday.
Yeah, so he was supposed to be at the summit around the sunrise the morning of the 5th of December, yeah.
So from what you know, can you tell us what happened on that climb?
So he recorded videos for us throughout it all, which was really nice to have after. And throughout all the videos, he was just saying that it's the hardest thing he's ever done, but he could only really go off what the guides were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that it's normal, you're supposed to feel this way, whatever. And everything was good for the first 4 days of the climb. Well, as good as it was the hardest thing he had done, in his own words. But
For 4 days.
Yeah.
It was 4 days of a climb. So once he called you that morning, you weren't going to hear from him until he came down.
Yeah, he had called us that morning, yeah, and he couldn't use his phone when he was on the mountain. Mm-hmm. So he called us the day before he started the climb and recorded videos throughout then.
And so when he left, they would camp at night?
Mm-hmm. They climb up to a certain distance and then they'd actually climb back down a little bit just so they get a bit more of the altitude.
Acclimatized, yeah.
Yeah, acclimatized. And they were just saying that, well, Alan, after he came back, a good friend of James, is that they just didn't get much sleep at all.
Okay.
But it was just nice for Alan, spent a lot of time and they really got to know each other a bit more than they did before.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, day two. And it was the same the whole way through. And he was updating us through videos. And even there's just photos of Alan and James, or just James, on day four, or the last photos of him. And he looks as fit as ever. He looks just like him, even though he's saying it's the hardest thing he's ever done. He looked fine and he was speaking fine in the videos. It wasn't like he was gasping for air or anything. And then the video that I always be watching, he took a video the night before just saying happy birthday to me.
Okay.
And yeah, I loved that video, but it was really nice to have all them videos.
So he decided then, they obviously decided that morning to push for the summit, is what mountaineer speak is. So what do you know of what happened then?
On that day, when they're on the mountain, they say pole, pole, and it just means slowly, slowly. And the whole time, James and Alan, they were going ahead of each other and slowing down. So sometimes James might be a bit ahead of Alan. They both had their own guides next to them. So it wasn't anything new. James and Alan were together and the guides talked to each other or whatever. And Alan said he was just going to go ahead. So he went ahead and the gap between him and James just started spreading and spreading and spreading. And then eventually Alan had reached the summit of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
But James was nowhere to be seen. But I'm pretty sure Alan still had the cake and the candle. And I think he lit it at the top of the mountain for James. But James is just kind of slowing down according to the guide, that he was just slowing down, slowing down. And at this point then, James has sat down to take a rest. And then the altitude sickness killed him. But it's a painless instant death with altitude sickness. And I'm pretty sure anyway. But then Alan, then on the way down, he wasn't far from the summit at all, only a few hundred meters. So then Alan on the way down was just coming down normally and not expecting to see anything at all, because he had just reached the summit, only expecting James to be maybe on the way down, see him soon. And then Alan seeing James laying there dead, like.
So he was gone instantly.
Yeah, just like that, yeah. It wasn't like it was slowly, like he was getting worse and worse climbing, like he was grand and then he wasn't, just as he just got to that moment, like, and then just like that, Alan was literally only talking to him, my father, just however long before, maybe an hour before, talking to him grand, and just like that, he was gone then.
Wow. And so they're on a mountain. So what was happening there? Did the guides radio for help?
So the guides were there, and Alan was just saying to them, you need to get a helicopter, you need to get him off the mountain. And then the guides were saying, we need $30,000 cash. And they were just refusing. They need $30,000 cash. And even besides all that, they weren't allowed to bring money onto the mountain. For some reason, for whatever reason, it had said that they couldn't bring money onto the mountain, but they refused to get a helicopter without Alan giving them $30,000 in their own currency at that moment in time. Like, so Alan literally still going through the struggle of climbing it just after reaching the summit, and then he's just seeing James like that, and they're saying, we're only bringing him down if you give us $30,000 right now. Like,
oh my God, that's horrendous, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
And did they try and perform CPR?
Well, he says that he did. And I think that they were supposed to have an oxygen tank.
Yeah.
But they didn't have it. And what they had to do was put him on a stretcher, and the guides carried him down off the mountain. And then they were supposed to go down off the mountain over the course of, I think, 2 days or 2 nights even. But then they rushed down literally over the course of 1 day and didn't sleep or anything. So then Alan was even destroyed after, because it was way faster than what it was supposed to be. Yeah. And obviously just so shell-shocked after seeing that as well.
God almighty. And meanwhile, ye are all at home with no idea.
Yeah.
So
yeah, while all this is happening, we don't have a clue, yeah.
So what happened then?
So, woke up on my birthday and I had the day off school. And my sister Lily had the day off school as well, and she was going to the Crescent shopping with my mum, and small James was in school. And everything was like normal. So mum and Lily were going down shopping, so I said I was going to go down to the gym with one of my friends. And I was at the gym with him, and then just done a workout as normal. Everything felt normal, like,
yeah.
None was weird. And then my mum called me while I was in the gym and just said that James had had a heart attack. And she was just like crying. She was in a state. But she just said that he had had a heart attack. And then my sister Lily took the phone off her and I think asked me to go collect James. Or maybe it was actually before that, sorry. My mother had already asked me to go collect James, my younger brother, from school before she knew anything, just because they were going to be caught up shopping.
Mm.
And then my mom said that to me about James having a heart attack, and my sister took the phone and just told me James had a heart attack, but he was in the hospital or something, because there was a miscommunication between when Alan told my mom. But I heard that, and for some reason I was with my friend in the gym, but I just didn't say it to him. I don't know, I was really just shocked by it.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't know how to feel. And then I left the gym, my friend, I just said that I have to go collect my brother, and he was walking with me. And then my mom just called me back and just said, James is gone. And then I just broke down into tears. And I remember being with my friend, and I know even in the moment I kind of felt bad for my friend, because my friend has autism, and it was just, what do you even say, like, and I was just there in a state, just straight away my mind just went to Lily and small James, like, and I was just so worried for them and just thinking about their future and mum's future, and I was just saying that to my friend, just talking to them about that, and then after that, my mother had said to me on the phone, don't go collect James, forget about collecting him, he's going to go to his friend's house. But the way that it had worked out, by the time where I was, it was just faster for me to walk through past the school, and it was around the time that he was finishing still. So I seen Small James right after hearing this, and he didn't know he was going to his friend's house. So he was there with his friends and his friend's dad. And then I just remember him just high-fiving me and just saying something normal, like, "What's up, bro? I'm going to my friend's house." And that was just so sad to me, because I just remember, like, that's the last time that he was ever going to feel not happy, but that type of happiness. And I just seen, like, a sadness in his friend's dad, just because he knew. And then Small James was just there so happy.
Carefree for the last time.
Yeah, like, I know it's not that he's never going to be happy again, but just that type of happiness.
I know,
like,
what you mean.
Just,
yeah. That was the last moment.
Yeah, that really was. And then I went back home, and my mum and my sister followed up home a few minutes later. And I just remember them both sitting outside the back, bawling, crying at me, just trying to hold my tears back, just trying to be strong for them. But it was just too hard, like, in that moment. And we spent time just sitting there together. And Small James then came back a few hours later. And this had just been me and Mam and Lily just sat down crying, like. And then Small James came back a few hours later and came inside. And then my mum just said that she has something horrible to tell him. And because it was my birthday, like, I don't know, did he say it now or did he say it after? But he genuinely thought that we weren't going to Milano's, because we were supposed to go to Milano's for my birthday. So in his head, like, the bad thing my mother was going to say was that our dinner was cancelled, like. And then she told him that his father passed on the mountain, and he just started bawling, crying. And I remember before my mom said it, we were just there, just wondering how could we say it to James, like. And I offered to say it for my mom, but she just felt as best as she did. But yeah, that was just such a hard moment, just seeing Small James just cry such real tears, even though he was only, I think, 7 years old at the time, or maybe 8, but such real tears just pouring out of such a young child that should never have to happen, like.
Yeah, it's awful. So I suppose you're all there gathered together, and then did you find it hard to even believe that it was real?
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
You know it's real, but yeah, you know, at the same time, you obviously all wanted to get him home then.
Yeah, 100%, yeah. Mam was really worried about that. And later on that night, my grandparents on my mum's side came up, and my aunt did as well, and a few friends called over. And I just remember all Small James wanted to do was just play the PlayStation, like. And obviously I was in shock and not believing it, but it was just a completely different story to him. Like, he was just so distracted, and just, like, it's almost like he didn't even know it was happening, like. So I just remember we're all so sad, and then I just remember spending the night just playing Fortnite with him then, like, just because his poor innocent mind literally could not believe that it had happened, like. And he was there laughing, playing the game, because it hurt him so much. His brain genuinely couldn't believe that information, like.
Yeah. Where in any 7-year-old's head should their dad be gone? Like, they're not equipped to understand that. We're not.
I know.
You know. So then he obviously had about communicating with Alan, I suppose, was the point of contact to try and figure out about getting him home.
Yeah, well, actually, yeah, we were talking to Alan about everything, but Alan was truly in a state over there, and having to deal with the guides and police reports and everything, and he was being put under pressure by the people over there, and it was just a horrible situation. So my father's brother and his wife both went over to Tanzania.
Wow.
To help Alan sort things out. And
put under pressure for money, is it?
No, he was put under pressure when he had to write a report about what happened. And I think it was just something like there was a group of people from the company, or he was just really intimidated, put into a small space with a bunch of people staring down on him, like, and just put under pressure after his brain's completely still all over the place during this time.
Yeah. Not alone just from what happened, but obviously yeah. even physically from the climb.
Jeez, yeah, of course.
Coming down so fast. They obviously didn't want, they were obviously trying to wash their hands of any yeah, responsibility.
Of course, yeah. And they did do things wrong, but none of us had it in us to pursue mm-hmm. a report or anything after. It was just so broken, like.
Mm. So tell me, how did they go about getting him home, or what happened?
So it was actually, I think that my uncle's wife, someone in her family had set up a GoFundMe, and it was the Kevin Bell Foundation. And I can't even remember the numbers, just because as all this happened in my head, I was just in a state, but it was something like over 30,000 in the space of a week that we raised on the GoFundMe for the Kevin Bell Foundation. And so the money kept coming in on the GoFundMe, and then it took 10 days. It was 10 days after he passed when he came back.
What was those 10 days like for you?
Yeah, it was...
For you, what was that like?
Really tough. At the same time, there was good support. Like, a lot of people were coming over to the house, friends of his and family. So many people were coming over, like...
You okay with that? You found that
support? Yeah, yeah, it was supportive, yeah, definitely. And it was, at the time, a healthy distraction, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
All good people surrounding us. But it definitely was really tough. And at the same time, it was good having them people coming over, helping us, being supportive. Also, I didn't have that space to just lay down and cry, like... I was kind of hiding my emotions from all the people coming over. And at the start, I really didn't want to be putting my emotions onto my family and my mum, my sister, my brother either.
Mm-hmm.
So that was tough at the start, when every single day there was just people over at our house constantly, do you know?
That's what I imagined. That's why I kind of asked you, thinking you would have no space, even though it's good. Because, yeah. as you said, it kind of keeps you going. You know, someone just coming in and out keeps you moving. But then at the same time, you've no space to just lie down and cry. Like, you
100%,
know?
100%,
sure. Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? How, as a young lad, you feel like, I can't show anyone.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And one of my really close friends, I didn't text anyone or say it to anyone when it happened. I just didn't feel like I wanted to. I just wanted to be there with my family. But I posted it up, and people were posting up when the GoFundMe began. And yeah, I just didn't say anything to anyone about it. And a lot of people texted me, sent a message just saying that they were sorry to hear about it. But it was just one of my really close friends that just like forced me to come out and talk to him about it. And it took that for him to force me to come out and let you come over to my house and just drag me out for a walk. But that really just meant a lot to me, like, because it's already hard enough to talk to people about stuff, but it really just meant a lot for me that he just came over and he's like, you're coming out and talking to me about it. And I did want someone to talk to about it, and I just really appreciated him taking that step. Like,
that's amazing. What age were you at the time?
16, so we were both 16.
You were 16 and he was 16, and he had the foresight to say to you, come out and talk to me.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of people of the generation above you now, I won't be giving away my age here, but, you know, don't really know what to say or do when it comes to, like, I have a 15-year-old nephew now who lost both his parents, and I don't know what to say or how to, I mean, he just says nothing. So it's hard. But like, when you have someone of your own age to meet you, like, you know, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. It just showed that he cares. Like, there isn't any right thing to say. And it's so hard to find anything to say to someone in those situations. But he was willing to, even if things were awkward or if he didn't know what to say, just to be there because he knew that I needed someone to be there. Like,
that's amazing.
Something I've been thinking about a lot lately is how grief lives in our body. It's not just in our minds. It settles into your chest, your shoulders, your stomach. It can feel so heavy. And I know that stuck feeling because I was stuck for years myself. The only thing that helped me begin to lift myself out of that hole, even a tiny bit, was movement. But I had to go really gently at the beginning. I just had no motivation to get up and do a workout. That's why I wanted to share something that might help. It's called EcoFitness, and it's a beautiful, gentle online movement space created by Corina Duffy. Corina's been at rock bottom herself, and so she's created this with people like you in mind, especially if you're grieving or going through something hard. This isn't about pushing yourself or chasing big fitness goals. I imagine that's the last thing on your mind at the moment. It's for the days when you're in your pajamas or maybe even in tears. It's about moving just enough to feel a tiny bit better, to reconnect with your body in the gentlest way. EcoFitness gives you 4 live 30-minute gentle workouts each week, a full on-demand library, and thoughtful coaching messages to help build small, healthy habits, especially through life's tougher moments. Corina is offering the listeners to this podcast a 30-day free trial of her app, and I'd really encourage you to just give it a try. There's a link in the show notes. Just click through to get started. You can cancel anytime, no pressure, just an invitation. If you're feeling stuck, this could be a gentle place just to begin. So visit the show notes, click on the link and give it a go.
So you, obviously, he comes home then. Did you go to meet him or how did that happen?
So he was dropped at a house and I remember then he was brought into the sitting room and we were all in the kitchen where he was being brought in. It was just us at the house and we had put up a sign or posted up something just to tell people not to come over the morning of that, because even at this point, 10 days on, there's still people coming over all the time. And he was brought into the sitting room, we're out in the kitchen, and then the people who were transporting him left us, and the casket was there open. And I really just remember all 4 of us walking in and me just trying so hard not to cry because we're all just holding each other. And it was just impossible, like, just seeing him. And it just, that was really, like, the moment where it felt like it became real. And I know it was still so surreal for so long after that. And even is still a certain level of surreal till today, like. But that's when it felt like it was believable, like, and I had to know it was true. And it became a lot harder in that moment, I feel like, but at the same time, later on that day, it was kind of bittersweet. All of his family came over, his siblings and our cousins and everyone, and people got to spend time with him. And we all as a family just sat down in the sitting room and just ordered takeaway and just threw on a movie. And then me and my mum slept in the sitting room. And it was really weird. It was like the best night's sleep that me and Mam had gotten through everything. And even after that, I haven't slept right since all this has happened. Like, but there was like a weird comfort having him in the house. Obviously so sad, but there was a weird comfort. And even I remember our dog being there and the whole time during all this, he was moping around the house and it was like he was grieving too. And when the coffin was there, he literally just jumped up onto the arm of the couch and just rested his head on the top of the coffin. And I swear, he would literally bite anything and run away with it or destroy anything, but there was a bunch of flowers on the floor. And he just spent a few minutes looking up at the coffin and then he jumped up on the armchair and just rested his head on the coffin. And it was so sad. Why not?
Poor dog.
It was horrible, yeah. It was like he was just soaking in everyone's sadness while everyone was coming over crying and talking about it. And he was just like soaking it all in.
God, so intelligent, aren't they, animals?
Yeah.
So obviously you had the funeral then. How was that for you personally?
Well, the funeral, it was nice in a way. Everyone kind of got to do what they wanted, and my mother made sure of that. Small James told bad dad jokes, as he always did, and me and two of the cousins done push-ups, and I can't remember, I'm not sure if my sister wrote a poem or a speech or something like that. She wrote a poem at their wedding. Mm. She's very good at writing poems, so she could have done that. And everyone kind of just done what they wanted at the funeral. My mother made sure that that happened. But it was really hard, the funeral. Just walking with the coffin. I had the carrying the coffin with his brother and nephew, and it was a really hard thing to do.
Yeah. So obviously when he's gone, then I imagine you, even just from what you're saying, like being so worried about your siblings and your mom and everything, did you feel this whole responsibility?
100%, yeah. And I think the whole process of grieving kind of started later for me, because I spent so long trying to suppress everything from the very start, like trying to just be strong for them. But really all that done was just delayed all the feelings that were going to happen inevitably. And I kind of went through a stage of being very angry after suppressing all those feelings for so long. So in the end, it almost wasn't worth it trying to be strong for them, because I was just so angry at everything, at life, at everything. And I couldn't change. I didn't want to feel that way, but that's just how I felt after suppressing my sadness for so long, trying to be there for my family.
Mm. And what changed that then? Were you able to see that you were angry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for a while I could see it, and I felt like I couldn't change it, but I knew seeing it was the first step. But there was a while where I could see it, and I just felt like it was going to stay and it could never change. And even sometimes it's almost like I still feel it inside me, but it's a lot, lot smaller. Like I felt like it was uncontrollable at that time. Like that I was just hiding my emotions all the time before that. And then it just felt like I could not do that anymore at this point. And I just felt so angry at the world.
And did you begin to like show emotion then?
Yeah, and that's probably what helped get rid of that, just talking and just really understanding, and understand that the world isn't against me, like, and that if someone gives out to me in school, it could be because they're having a bad day as well, and everything happens for a reason, and just like all those little things that were annoying me, it isn't that deep. And it just was really important to me, my family, and how they felt. So I felt horrible when they were seeing me so angry and I was taking my anger out on them. So it just took that, me taking a step back to understand and talk, to get to a place where I could actually be there for them again.
Yeah. Did you go to counselling or anything like that?
I didn't. I'm still in counselling now.
Helpful?
Yeah, I find it really helpful. There was this one person that he called over to the house and said at the start that he'd give me counselling anytime I'd like. And at the start, I was just thinking that there's not a chance I'm going to go to counselling. And I hated the idea of it, I guess, because I was suppressing my emotions. For a while, I felt like I didn't have emotions or bad emotions. And when I was constantly getting angry, I was just like too irritated to even speak the words how I knew I was feeling. But when I started talking to my mom more and just being okay with being upset, and I felt like I was able to let myself be vulnerable again and not be so defensive and angry, I started going to counselling, and that really did help. And I still go, no, and I love it.
So it's obviously what you feel a change in is how you feel inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've learned that it's through just talking. And if you're sad, cry. And if you're happy, laugh. And if you're angry, let it roar at you.
Yeah. You just have to go with the flow, really. And there's the 100% different stages. Mm. And my mum was saying it, like, she almost feels happy now. And for people, it's normal to feel happy. But it almost feels wrong for us to feel happy after such a horrible thing's happened. And like that, I felt happy at the start of the year and then almost felt the big crash after it. But it is just waves. Sometimes things are amazing. Sometimes things are horrible. Sometimes they're all right. But they'll never be the same. Like, that's the main thing.
Then your friends, do you find it hard? Like, are you still in school?
Yeah, I am, yeah. Going into sixth year.
Amazing. I'm just blown away that someone this age is able to talk the way you are. It's amazing. It's so good to see. It's so healthy.
Thank you. That's the thing.
Do you find like your friends though, like that they have, I suppose a lot of them would have no understanding because they haven't maybe lost somebody. But what are 17-year-old lads like now when it comes to something like this?
Yeah, that is the thing, like, no one can really understand, you know, and everyone's grief is different, but there's no way to even understand grief unless you've lost someone. The main thing, I have good friends that are close to me and I can talk to some of them, like that friend that took me out of my house to talk to me. But the main thing that people don't get is how much you feel it. Like they wouldn't understand that I still get upset about it every day a year and a half on, because everyone goes through things and everyone goes through sadness or a breakup or maybe not being friends with someone that you used to, but like losing my father, they don't understand that I'm feeling that every day and I'm gonna feel it every day. That's not gonna change, and I think that's what people struggle to understand with who haven't gone through grief.
Mm. You know, like, your age is so, you know, we hear so much about young lads taking their own life. And like, I wonder about, do you find that, you know, you being so open and so honest, do you find that's rare? Do you find that there might be a lot of lads around you that are really struggling that A, can't open up? And do you find that if you felt you were unable to, where would you be now? Would you be losing your mind?
100%, yeah. I think, I don't know where I'd be if I wasn't able to be honest to the people around me. And it really helps how open my mother is.
Mm.
And I really especially don't know where I'd be if my mom wasn't there to hear me and all the guys out. And vice versa, we're all there to hear each other out always. I really don't know where I'd be if I was in a household that just suppresses emotions, and if they were all acting like everything was all right at the same time as me, and then if we all went through the anger at the same time, it would have been a different story. But we were all there to support each other when we needed it most, and we all went through rough patches. But I think it's important to all of us to just be truthful and honest with our emotions, and it avoids a lot of arguments and anger in the household. And I think that's just what's kept us so close to each other and stopped us from falling apart, just us all being able to be honest to each other.
Yeah, well, your mom is phenomenal. Like, I know from spending a weekend with her, like, she's real open and she really encourages people to, like, and like, there's not a lot of people like that, you know. I was thinking as well about, like, years ago, like, there was a whole men, like, man up, stop crying, get on with it. That's probably still happening, which is why you feel like I need to be strong for everyone.
Yeah.
Do you feel though, in your generation now, or like your peers, has that changed a bit? Like, would you find that there's a bit of like, man up? Is there a bit of that still going on, or no? Have they changed? Hopefully.
Well, people wouldn't go around saying it as much, but there definitely is people who still think that in themselves. But the people that are close to me, it doesn't need to be said. Like, it's true that everyone cries sometimes. You know, you can act like you don't, but it's the fact that everyone does. And if you're not crying, you're still feeling the emotions. And you can either talk about it now or later on in your life, it will come out in other ways. And if you don't want it to come out in words and tears or just laying down and being depressed the odd day now, it will come out in anger and hatred later on in your life. And I just think it's the least manly thing you could do, suppress your emotions and hide it from the people that you love, because it will just show in a more negative way later in life.
Oh my God, I want to write that down. That's amazing. Like, you're so right. Like, you know, my whole thing is, when your mom might tell you when she was at the retreat, I always tell them all, like, we as Irish people, or even not even just Irish, it's worldwide. Yeah. If someone starts crying, they start apologizing, start going, oh, sorry, and try to stop themselves. And like, my way of understanding it, I've always gone, if you start crying or if you start laughing, would you say sorry?
Yeah.
Like, why would you say sorry? Because you're crying. It's just, you know, it's just another emotion. Like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. But the damage that has been done over the years, especially to men and young men, not being able to know how to talk, because we've been teaching them over and over again to stop.
Yeah.
Like, to stop. Like, my little lad now, he's nearly seven. And I would never be like, stop. Even that from a child, I feel, if you're like saying to them, oh, stop crying, stop. Why? Mm. Like, why would you stop? Why would you stop someone from crying?
I know, yeah. That isn't a big deal. The tears will go away and it will just leave them off better in the end.
Yeah. And your little brother now, do you and your sister, obviously, do you be feeling worry, and do you feel responsibility to kind of step into a role where you're taking care of them?
Definitely to a degree. Also, in weird ways, they also both take care of me sometimes. And my sister's really good to help cook and clean and stuff like that. So if it's ever just the three of us at home, I'm the one who's babysitting, but really it's her, because she's the one who's cooking all the meals and doing all that. And the same even with small James, just because he's so positive, like, and he just do it unsubconsciously, like, I could just be having a horrible day and you just wouldn't hear something negative come out of him. Like, he's just go, and he's so happy about everything, like,
wow.
So subconsciously or unsubconsciously, we're all just looking out for each other, and like that, yeah, we all go through rough patches, and that's when we're there to step in for each other when we need the most.
When it comes to James, then, do you find a place that you like to go or things that you like to do just to remember him, or is there anything that brings you comfort?
Well, 100% every time I run, James just lives on my mind, like, and I done the Cork Marathon in memory of him because we were supposed to do that together. And now I'm training to do a 60K trail run in memory of him that he was planning on doing, but he never got the chance to. So every single time I go to run, it's for James. And I don't think I'd be where I am with running now if it wasn't for just those few times that James made me get out and made all the difference. Like, also, I go up to the grave every chance I get to. It's in Cork, so I can't go up that often, but every time I am up there, I do go. And it really feels like a weird kind of relief after leaving there. Every time I go in, I'm in such a state, but it does make me feel a lot closer to James. And I always kind of get a lot off my chest while I'm there at the grave. And it does just feel like a weird relief after it. I always feel a bit drained and a bit upset, but also I just feel like almost physically lighter just after getting those few tears out and just talking to the grave. Like, so I feel close to him when I'm there.
It's a long, I suppose, way to go, isn't it, without him?
Yeah.
You know, being so young, you think about your whole life ahead of you without him. Like, it's a bit scary nearly, isn't it?
100%, yeah.
To think of all the time that you have to face without him. Like, do you feel hopeful? Did you ever get scared that, like, you'll fall into a deep place again of sadness or anger or anything like that?
Yeah, I definitely do. And like I said, sometimes I do still feel inside me just a lot less than what I did before, to the point where I can choose to not be that angry person, and just continue expressing myself and in hope that it just gets smaller and stays smaller. And yeah, I definitely do worry sometimes that I'm going to go back into a bad place, but I know, and I have trust in my family, like, and I know that they'll all be there for me, because I 100% do the same thing for them. And I'm just so grateful that we have each other, because I really just don't know where any of us would be at right now without that. So I'm so grateful now, and it just changes everything after seeing someone really just lose their life. Like, every single day they're gone now. Every little thing they used to, they physically can't do now. And it really just changes the perspective of everything. Like, and after that happening now, how many times I said no to him offering to take me out for a run. Now I feel almost obliged to, like, because I have the gift that I have two legs and I have a set of lungs that are fully working, and I'm able to go out to run. And that's something that James wanted me to do. And it just feels like a blessing to be even able to do it. So I almost feel obliged to do it to my full capability. Like,
it's amazing. What do you think James taught you the most? Like, is there any words of wisdom you remember him telling you, or is it just in general that lesson of get up, get out?
Yeah, well, he did have a few sayings that he would say when we're out running. The rent's always due and no surrender. And yeah, that's kind of one that always just sticks with me, no surrender. I got a tattoo of it on my leg a few months after he passed, yeah. And I was thinking that he'd always just be saying quotes like that. And yeah, and it's just upsetting that it really takes for that to happen in the past for me to really see, like, how much it meant every time he just asked and asked and asked for me to just go outside the front and play a bit of ball with him or go out on a run with him. And sometimes that is what it takes, like, to really just realize how much it meant. And yeah, like that, it changed my perspective on everything. And now running means something to me that I don't know if it ever would have if James was still here. And same with my family. I worry a lot more, but I'm also a lot more grateful. And also a lot of opportunities came up for us to get closer with the rest of our family that never would have happened if he was still here. And it's horrible. It would have been lovely for us to meet up with his childhood friends and all the distant relatives and everything while he was still here. But it was also really nice for us to get to hear those different stories about him while he was younger, and just everyone saying the same things about him, but just how they seen it in different ways, how he positively affected them and how they seen him happy and hardworking and a disciplined person. Like,
He sounded like a great guy, like, real, you know, no surrender. Come on.
Yeah, 100%.
Very positive.
Yeah, really. He went through a rough patch when he was younger. And I think that it was just that while I was going through a bit of a rough stage, he really just didn't want that to continue for me. And that's why even when he was just trying to do something nice by asking me to go for a run, to go to a match, anything, even if I freaked out at him and said, no, I don't want to do anything with you, he'd still ask again and again and again. And just like that, the one time that I took up the offer and turned into 2-3 times, and now it sticks with me. And I know that he just wanted the best future for me. And I just want to stick to that and do as much as I possibly can, especially with running and being in the gym and stuff.
It's interesting, isn't it? Like, I feel like he saved you in a way. Like, he
100%,
yeah. He caught you before you went down that bad road.
Yeah, I definitely think that too.
What do you think? Do you dream about your future? Like, as in what you would like to do? And because you've learned so much at such a young age, like, I feel like the sky is the limit really for you. Is your passion in running? Is that what you want to do?
Well, right now, my passion's definitely in running. I care a lot about the gym too. And I'd like to help other people, personal training in a way, but maybe something to do with running. But just like that, James helping me get out. And I really love the feeling of, like, I've brought a few of my friends out for their first runs. And some of them have continued to just run in their own time, and it really makes me feel good getting people out and showing people what could be a positive outlet for them, like, as running's been such a positive outlet for me. And yeah, running 100% is what I'm enjoying doing the most right now, and it just means so much to me. Like, I feel James running with me every time I'm out running, and it just feels like a gift to be able to do the things that he never was, like the 60K that I'm doing in September. And he had never gotten to do a sub 4-hour marathon, and then I done that as well. And
you did already?
Yeah, I done my first marathon.
In Cork?
Yeah, in Cork.
Sub 4?
Yeah. So
amazing.
Yeah, it just feels like a gift to be able to do all this for James.
The 60K that you're doing, are you doing raising money, or are you just doing it?
No, I'm just doing it. He has someone who James is really good friends with from Cork, and he's doing the 200K version. And he took me up Kerry to run 40K of the course, or well, 42K, a marathon worth of the course that it's on. And we done that together. So that was in training of the 60K. And he's been really good as well since everything happened, taking me out on runs. And just, we met so many people that just almost have a bit of James in them. And it's really just nice seeing that in all of his friends, good role models.
Mm. What would you say to someone that might be listening, maybe that's your age, male or female, but let's say male, who doesn't, let's say they've just lost someone.
Yeah.
Or they're going through something, maybe their parents have split up.
Yeah.
Or they're just in a world of their own pain inside, but they're not saying it. They don't know where to go. They don't know who to talk to. They don't know how to start talking. Like, would you say anything to them?
Well, I think you should definitely just talk to someone. And if they want to go and think something about it in their own time, let that be for them. But it will positively affect your life if you go and talk to someone. And if you have no one to talk to, write it down and write a diary, get it out one way or another. But don't hold it in, because you can't hold it in forever and it will come out. But it's up to you if you want to let it out now in the best way that you can, or let it come out later in a negative way. But I definitely think it should be more normal for people to talk, and people should do everything they can just to talk. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're a powerful young fella.
I appreciate it.
Your mom. Tell me about your mom, Frigo. Isn't she amazing? Does she is, mean the world to you?
Yeah. No, she really does. Every night I go into her room and just chat away to her. I literally spend about an hour every night talking to her. And it's like such a relief taking off me. I don't feel the need to ever lie to her. We have like such an open, honest relationship about everything. And it's such a relief, because I'm just not able to lie. I always get cut out whenever I try to lie about anything. So it's a relief to not have to. And especially after it happened, I feel like that's really just, I've been so open and honest about everything, and more things have come out that I didn't tell her before. Now we've accepted that, and she's told me more things, and I just feel like I get closer and closer at every day. And
was she always open like that with you? Did you always have an open relationship? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, well, we kind of went through a stage of not. When I was younger, I used to come home from school and tell her everything. But we definitely went through a stage of not having that.
Mm.
But then after everything happened, I think we're all just so vulnerable. We just like couldn't hide anything. We just need to be honest and we need to tell each other and just talk to each other. And I think that was definitely the start of us being really close to each other. And yeah, now if I'm not at home, I literally call her on the phone. We talk on the phone for half an hour. Like, I love talking to her about stuff. Yeah.
I see. As I said before we started, I have a son. I could only dream. I hope we're awful close now, but I'm like, I hope to God it stays that way.
Yeah. No, I love talking to my mum. She's like my at home counselor.
Though. I love
we
her.
Have lovely chats.
She's good crack. Like,
yeah, no, she is gas. I saw her. Our family, I just think my family is so funny. Some of the videos that we'd be taking, and you'd swear that they're doing it for the camera, but it's just all natural.
Yeah. Just before we go, I was thinking there as well, like, James dying so suddenly, has that had an impact on you where you're fearful of someone else dying or even your own health and stuff?
Yeah, oh, definitely. It's not like a fear that lives in me, but I just have thoughts that I never would have before, because that was something that no one even thought about, him going over there and something bad happening. It didn't pop into anyone's head. It wasn't a conversation or anything. So now I feel like it kind of is a conversation, no matter what I'm doing or my family's doing. It just kind of changed anything. It really just makes you realize that anything can happen at any time. Like, so it definitely added just a constant worry, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah. But then at the flip side of that, that's why you're embracing life and saying
100%,
let's get going.
And just caring a little bit less about the things that don't matter and caring a little bit more about the things that do.
Well, on that note, it's been such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much.
You're extremely inspiring. I love our youth. I think you're amazing, and it's just so positive and so healthy to be able to just talk about what happened, how you feel, all of that, like, because no one knows who, you know, who's going to have to go through that tomorrow. And you need to be able to hear people. You need to be able to see yourself and someone else. I'm sure online you don't, maybe didn't find a lot of people of your age going through the same thing, openly talking about it. But there's lads up and down the country now whose dad.
Yeah. 100%.
You know, so it's really important for people to hear themselves. But thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome.